colleagues. Our meeting format calls for a guest speaker, followed by open discussion. Our guest speaker will share for between 30 and 45 minutes before calling on people to share. During the open discussion portion of the meeting, we ask that you share liberally. we have a nice, intimate group tonight, so you can share to your heart's content. We want to be sure to give everybody a chance to participate, of course. It is now my great pleasure to introduce tonight's chair speaker, and this one comes with a little bit of a story. I was a hot mess when you guys met me, and there was one guy that he was my best friend in high school, and he stuck by my side, and he didn't quit believing in me, and he kept trying to help me, even though he didn't have he didn't have a solution for me. He just cared about me, and he cared about me long enough for me to find you, and after I found you. I got to learn how to be a friend instead of just, expecting a friend. And as it turns out, tonight's speaker is the eldest son of that best friend of mine. And it's with great pleasure that I introduce you tonight to Adam.
Hi, I'm Adam. I'm an alcoholic. sorry, I didn't know. This is my first time really on the Zoom meeting, so... bear with me as I work out the kinks. I was expecting to hear something back, and everyone's muted, so it's a little weird. But the 23rd of this month will be 2 years sober for me, which is mind-boggling. It's insane. It's a trip. Kind of brings a little bit of tears to my eyes. Think about, like, never thought I would make it to this point. You know, it's been rough. It's been a roller coaster, but every day is still better than the next. You know, the emotions are really what the roller coaster is. But you know, when I take a step back and get outside of myself and I look around at everything, you know, everything's better. It's amazing. So I'll back up a little bit. Growing up, we had a decent upbringing. You know, I didn't have anything traumatic happen to me when I was a child. Nothing crazy like that. You know, it was all fairly normal, I would say. You know, and I guess normal is what you're used to, but it was fairly normal. But growing up through grade school, I was kind of, I was the kid that the doctors and teachers, you know, claimed had ADHD, you know, I was the one that was kind of wild and a little bit out there and all that. So I was prescribed all the ADHD medicine, and I would go to the classes for behavioral stuff like that outside of school. You know, and that brought some stress upon my parents. You know, I just wanted to have fun. I didn't want to sit in my seat for 12 hours or however long it was, like 8 hours, but...
Push it out, son. Go play.
I couldn't sit still, so
muted.
There's that. Can you hear me now? Okay. All right. I don't know how much I was muted for. I'll just start where I left off. My behaviors through grade school brought stress into the home, and I could tell that, you know, there was stress upon my parents. I kind of carried some of that weight, I guess. Like, maybe unknowingly at the time, you know. I more so now through my sobriety, I've kind of realized, like, maybe that was... some reasoning as to my recklessness. You know, I felt like I was the problem, you know, and that, I carried that into like junior high and high school, where You know, I felt like I didn't fit in. I felt like I was the problem. I felt like there was something wrong with me. I didn't feel like I was cool enough, not good looking enough, whatever. I didn't have the right clothes. Like, you know, I think there's a degree to every high school kid, you know, 15, 16, 17, where they will all feel like that. I mean, but mine, it seemed as though it was slightly, a little bit more intense. You know, so I would tend to act out to get attention or to feel like I was fitting in and stuff. But I always had that feeling just deep down inside of me. This is not, like, I didn't feel right. I didn't feel like I ever belong anywhere. You know, so with the high school times, you know, that's when the kids start experimenting and all that. You know, I didn't start drinking when I was 8 years old or nothing like that. Like, I mean, there's a lot of people that have stories like that, but that's not mine. You know, it was very experimental at first, you know, but, you know, there's times where I would walk around parties just holding a beer in my hand. Like, I didn't really even want to drink it. Like, I just, that was what I saw was going on, and I saw that's what the cool kids were doing. That's the kids I wanted to fit in with. That's what they were doing, and so I began to look the part, you know, not even really fully participate. I just was on the fringe of it. And, there it is. I was on the fringe and I just wanted to feel part of, you know, and that slowly, quickly progressed into actually consuming the alcohol or other substances, which may be a present at the time. You know, and I began to feel the feeling of, those insecurities just leaving my body almost instantaneously, you know? As soon as that warmth went down into my stomach, everything else went with it, and it was amazing. I was on top of the freaking world. You know, I chased that feeling, you know? I could talk to the girls, I could dance, or so I thought at the time, and you know, I had the jokes, and it, everything was better. Everything seemed better. And like I said, I chased that feeling. You know, I chased it really, really hard, and I chased it really, really fast, and it led me to just, you know, my bottom. It led me to, you know, several bottoms, I guess. You know, this started probably sophomore year in high school, and by the time I was not even the end of my senior year, I was homeless. You know, some people get away with it for a lot longer, but I took a full advantage of the situation. You know, so around that time, I think it was after high school, it was that summer after my senior year, this is 2013, I believe. My graduation year was 2013, so that summer, I need to back up quite a bit. So the story that Bill had started with, that was my true first, like, introduction to what someone as an alcoholic was, or someone with excessive drinking or anything like that. I was much younger at the time. It's, what, 15 years ago, Bill? 16, 17? So it was quite a while ago. But I remember going with my dad to pick up the kegerator from Bill's house, not having a clue what was going on. I didn't even know what it was. You know, I remember standing in the street in front of our house, because we ended up coming back and giving it away to our alcoholic neighbors, who probably still use it to this day. And they're highly functional, but they're alcoholic nonetheless. Anyways, I remember standing in the street clear as day and talking to my dad about it, like, what was kind of going on. And, I mean, him explaining it to me as a young child, it was just kind of like, you know, too much of a good thing, sort of. You know, I don't really know how to explain it. Like, it will stick with my mind forever. I don't remember the words he used, but I remember that situation, especially now that I'm going through the program and I've gotten sober. But, going back to where I was at, so in the, that summer after high school, I guess I had my first true introduction to AA, and it was, I'm kind of off my storyline here a little bit. I don't exactly remember if this was the very first time or not. I'll kind of skim through these parts. So I don't remember if this was the very first introduction or not, but I remember I went with Bill to a men's, or not a men's retreat, it was just an AA retreat up, and it was at China Peak during the summer. And I was what, 3 days sober maybe, and just not even sober. I mean, I was trying to tame it with other things. Jeez. It's crazy to think back on it, but it was rough, and I don't really remember any of it. I remember not being able to sleep well, and I had to sleep on the top bunk, and it's probably shaking the guy underneath me because I was tossing and turning all night long. And I'm the brand new guy. Go get up, get the book that everybody signs, and I'm just shaking from the GTs and fear itself. And it was rough. I remember sitting down with someone and talking to them, and kind of, it's just kind of all blur, you know. Maybe with more of a sober mind, I would have remembered it, but I also went back out several times after that, you know, and that's the other part that I wasn't sure of the timeline. I went to 2 30-day programs. Pretty much, I think I almost got kicked out of the first one and kind of pulled my head out of my rear and was able to skim by for the first one. The second one, it was just basically a mutual agreeance that I just shouldn't be there any longer. Just kind of shook everybody's hands and headed out. Excuse me. I remember that one. I called some friends of mine who were up to no good and let them know when I was going to be there and what I was hoping for. And off and going again. I had people offer me a job. Just given a vehicle. I just had the world just handed to me, and I just didn't want it. I just wanted to just screw my life up, you know. And now that's how I see it. But then I would just tell people I wanted to be free. I wanted to be on my own and make my own choices and this and that. Stupid 17-year-old, but a lot of addiction traits as well, alcoholic traits that I can now identify. You know, back then didn't have a clue what was going on, but so I did that whole thing back and forth for a year or two, maybe a little longer. I ended up going to a year and a half long program after that, and it wasn't really AA based, not 12-step based, but it was highly structured, and you know, it helped me kind of grow up a little bit and become more mature. You know, so I kind of held it together for a little bit after that. You know, I was still screwing up, you know, just the sound of a tab on a beer can popping and some shit was about to go down. Excuse my language, sorry, I was trying not to guess, but, you know, it meant something bad was about to happen. It was like an alarm clock. It wasn't the quantity, it was just the sheer act of putting any sort of alcoholic substance in my body, you know, if even just a buzz was enough to just get me off and going, you know, the first drink was not the right one. I lost my train of thought. So I held it together for a little bit. I did good. I wasn't sober, but I wasn't doing the stuff that led me to the depths of my bottom. You know, I kind of climbed up a little bit, but I was still looking towards getting out of that hole, out of the bottom. And I got a good job, finally. I think that was my first, like, real job that I got. And I started driving the truck, semi-truck, cross-country. I switched between two different jobs for about a year, and then my girlfriend came with me for the third job that we were both together with, driving together for like 7 months. And she got pregnant during that time. And so she came home for a couple months and I was still driving around. And this is probably like something that hits me the hardest when I talk about it. I mean, I'm not going to start crying, but it's something that, you know, I try to hold on to so I can remember it. Like, she was at home, pregnant. We got a place, and I'm still out there doing long haul. And I had a load to pick up in California, up north just a ways. It was like, I ended up parking in Ripon that night at the truck stop over there. And I had enough time to make it to the appointment for the first ultrasound. But I stayed up all night having fun. And I ended up sleeping all through the appointment. And so she had to call me on FaceTime while she was at the doctor's office, and I remember her saying something about, like, there's a little baby in there, and this, messing me up, man. that sucks. I gotta live with that forever, you know, my first son, my first child, you know, not there because of a choice that I made to get high that night. Yeah, I still have that one kind of bottled up a little bit, I feel like, and you're talking about it right now, it's shook me up more than it usually does, but, yeah, it sucks, man, it's freaking old disease, it's a pain in the ass, I'm grateful for where I'm at today, and I'm going to continue to talk more about how I got there, so yeah, I ended up coming home and getting a local job. And same thing, just could not pull my head out of my butt. You know, it was just, you know, she was still pregnant, you know, up until like 2 weeks before my son was born, I was out there just going, you know, and when I was in town, I ended up hanging out at this place, where there was a kid there that I was getting loaded with, and, we were just tearing it up together. And he ended up crashing his car one night, going to rehab, came back, and it was not the same person. Absolutely not the same person. I was very leery. I was like, what the heck did they take, or what did they give you? Like, what happened? Like, gave him some sort of happy pill or something when he came back. It's not the same person. Completely different. And, you know, I knew what it was. You know what I mean? I knew what AA was. I've been around it long enough. I knew what was going on. He was sober. He was happy. He had a light and just a sheer joy shining off of him. You know, and something that just, like, boggled my mind. And so hesitantly, I asked him, like, hey, buddy, like, can you help me out a little bit here? He gave me his phone number, and we talked outside for a little bit. I think I went to a couple meetings with them. I think I maybe pulled like 3 months together just sitting in the back of a meeting. That's pretty much it. And then kind of maybe a couple months went by, me going back out. And just one night, told my wife I was going to go out just for a couple drinks, you know, and same old story that I told her 100 times that she fell for every time. And I told her I'd be back by like 9 o'clock at night. 9 o'clock in the morning rolls around, and I'm still ain't home, and all kinds of stuff had happened between me and her during that whole time. You know, she didn't just wait till 9 o'clock in the morning. She was freaking out all night. So I came home and just went on a rage. Told her it was all her fault, this and that. Just did some sick stuff. Just messed up stuff. You know, she had bunny rabbits in the backyard, and I told her I was going to let the bunny rabbits out so that they would run away. Just sick. Just insane. You know, I would go to that extent to make it seem like it was her fault for some reason. Just to take the blame off me, you know, I don't know. That just messed me up, but, so I slept for a little bit after that and woke up and texted that kid. I think I just said, what's up, man, or something very generic to me. He asked me how I was doing. I said, same old thing. And all he did was text me an address and a time. And I knew exactly what was going on. You know, it was a meeting. So I showed up to that meeting and... I don't remember any of it. I don't I don't really remember going to it. I know I went. You know, that's my sober date. June 23rd, which is a couple days from now, Wednesday, off 2 years. But yeah, it's been a journey since then. I've been sort of resistant. Now recently I've gotten a new sponsor and I've been going through the steps a little better. And something that we talked about a lot was like, I hadn't up until that point done the steps correctly because I wouldn't have been so resistant. You know, I was holding on to my will. I didn't have a proper step three, which was important, and then I was held up on step four forever. And that was one of the things that I would always hear in the meetings. If you're stuck on step four, it's because you didn't do step three right. And I think a lot of the other steps fall into that as well. If you can't turn your will over, then basically screwed. I mean, that was my problem for a long time. Like I said, when I was first started, it's been a roller coaster, but the way my life is today is insane. It boggles my mind to where I'm at today. I'm sitting in a nice car right now outside of an apartment that I'm able to pay for all on my own through a job that I've worked my butt off for, and I wouldn't have any of it without the program. The materialistic objects, it's nice. I'm proud of that stuff. But it's not because of me. The footwork maybe that I've done because of being in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I wouldn't have any of it without the program. The relationships that I have today through the program, I can call it, I've got a group chat of some guys in the program that are just so solid. We call ourselves the Wolfpack. I can call any of one of those guys at any time of the day. I mean, some of them probably won't answer at 2 in the morning, but if I can get a hold of them, they'll sit up for the rest of the night and talk with me about anything, literally anything. I mean, I could just probably sit there and complain, and they don't want to hear any of it, but they'll sit there and talk with me about it. There's a couple people, I think there's probably one person out of the however many there was that I was getting loaded with that I still talk to, but I only talk to him now too because I'm trying to help him get sober. He's dealing with a lot of stuff, and it's amazing to give back to him in the little ways that I can, Even just answering the phone for him, just talking to him, makes me feel good. It makes me feel good to see that he's trying. I haven't had a sponsee yet, but I want to work more of a solid program. It hasn't been that long. I white knuckled it for a long time, and it was not fun. It's not miserable. It was miserable, but it doesn't need to be miserable. My favorite saying that I've probably ever heard is that AA is a simple program for complicated people, and that couldn't ring any more true for me. I'll say that every day in my life. Keep it simple, stupid. I love that stuff. I hated the lingo, but I don't want to get off on another tangent. But I didn't like the lingo at first, but once it starts to hit home, once you start to open your ears and listen to what's going on, you start to realize what's happening. My program is not where I want it to be right now. I'm struggling. Well, I fought the system a little bit. I have to be honest about that. I have held on to my will for a long time. Probably a good year and a half of the 2 years I've been sober, I was white knuckling it. I was continuously going to meetings and I would share, and a lot of it was woe is me, why am I so depressed? Why am I so miserable? This and that. While I'm sitting there listening to the answers before and after my shares, and I share about how miserable I am. And it all falls on me. I did not relinquish or give up my my will to a higher power. You know, and you know, I struggled. I think the hardest part was that I couldn't understand what God was. You know, all through my life, I was very mechanically inclined, and I had to understand how everything worked, and I had to try and figure out what God was, and I couldn't do it. And so I just washed my hands of it, basically, and, you know, my will was everything. But now, you know, I'm progressing into more of a state of spirituality, and now things are easier, you know? You know, we have rough days. We got three kids, and I have a crazy job that I work 18 hours a day at. And you know, we just had twins. Like all three of our kids are less than 2 years old, so it's quite hectic inside. That's why I'm sitting in the car. You know, so my life is insane. It's crazy. It is crazy, but it's manageable now. You know, I can go through a day and be productive and not have to drink about it, you know, and that's because of the program, that's because of the work that I have put in so far, you know, and I keep that in my mind, knowing that when I get to the place where I'm able to actually do everything that is so clearly laid out in front of me, that I won't be able to fathom how amazing my life will be at that point, you know, progress, not perfection. I'm growing into that person every single day from just a little bit of work, you know, just doing this meeting right now is extremely out of my comfort zone and out of the norm for me. I have purposely stayed away from the Zoom meetings. It's not my cup of tea, but Bill called me and he asked me to do it, and I said, yes, sir, no problem. I was sorry, not yes, sir, but yes, you got it, Bill, no problem. I knew right away what I needed to do, you know, and 3 months ago, I would have said no. 3 months ago, I did say no when Bill asked me to do it. It's probably maybe a little longer than that, but I just, the progress that I see in myself every day is insane, you know, and
okay. I'm sorry.
It's not my doing.
Well, have a good
evening. That's the most important part. And yeah, I feel like I'm rambling at this point. Let's see the time. Oh, perfect time. 45 minutes exactly. So yeah, my name is Adam and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Adam. What a great story, man. Great story of hope. And I feel really fortunate to have been at the front row watching the Adam Show. So thanks for sharing your experience with us. Hey, we are now going to start the discussion portion of the meeting. We'd like to hear from as many people as possible. So, there you go. And so I'm going to turn the meeting back over to Adam. And, Adam, I trust you can probably see the names of the participants. So you can just call people to share.
Okay. I might not. Is it Oren? Is that? Oh, okay.
Hello, everybody. Oren, I'll call it. First off, I just want to thank my creator for another day of sobriety. With that being said, thank you, Adam, for that. That was awesome. Sure, you know, I came in a little bit late, but, you know, I can come from town. I live like, about 15, 20 minutes away from town. But yeah, man, I can relate to your story quite a bit, man. You know, one thing that stuck out to me is, when you said, when you're talking about when your companion was pregnant with your kids, you know, like, one of your babies, and that was me. You know, I shot myself, back in 2018 when this little girl was in her mommy's belly, you know. And I know what you mean when you say you hold on to that, you know, and it's just not to necessarily tear you down, but to remind you what it could get like, you know. And that's the insanity of this disease, man, that I come to find out and learn about in these programs. And it's only through these programs that I've been able to stay sober. You know, I'm 135 days in of sobriety, man. And you know what? It's because of the good graces of my creator and this program. And, you know, not to toot anybody's horn, but, you know, people like, Mr. Bill that kept me interested, you know, and in this program. And, man, all these sober days is because I've been literally working this program like it's meant to be work, you know. Like, I've learned so much about myself. You know, I've learned so much about life in general. You know, I'm 36 years old, man, and I'm learning how to be an adult today, you know, in my sobriety, because I was far from that responsible father, you know, adult. Yeah, I did adult things. I paid bills and stuff like that. But, you know, I never really, you know, was there for my kids and my companion like I should have been, you know. But, man, I'm so blessed, you know. Like, our power been going out up here. I live up on the reservation up here, and our power went out on Friday, on Saturday, and I got 5 kids, man, you know, and they were just going through it. So I was kind of trying to hit meetings, too, at the same time, feeling bad because I wasn't hitting meetings. And I called out one of my brothers. Like, he said, you have a another thing that stuck out is you have a group text of brothers that are in the program. And same here, man. We got about like 8 people in this little text chat, man, that just constantly encourage each other throughout the day, you know. And yeah, you know, just calling them, hey, bro, it's all right. You know, life's happening right now. You know, this is life on life's terms. You know, you can't, you know, like, really, you can't prepare for this kind of stuff, you know. But the more positive thing is that, like, I'm not craving a drink, you know, as much as stress it caused to have the power out and have my baby stressed out. Like, not even one drink didn't even cross my mind. You know, a cold, anything didn't cross my mind. You know, what crossed my mind is finding some coolness for my kids. You know what I mean? And had to drive all the way down to Bakersfield for a hotel room. You know, I'm blessed to even be able to do that. You know, like, if I was still in my drinking mode, and this is just being totally honest, man, I probably would be out there drinking while my kids were out here in the home, letting mom deal with them. You know. Like, that's how sick I get in my disease, you know what I mean? And I ain't ashamed to say it, man. Like, I need to own up to that kind of shit, and I need to, you know, bring it out and expose it for what it is, man. It's where my alcoholism takes me. And today I'm the farthest away from that person I've ever been, man. And I'm literally living a pretty happy life, man. I mean, yeah, there are days that are up and down, but you know what, again, like I say, I share this quite a bit. Those things that used to baffle me before and that used to cause me to have messed up a day, a messed up week, are only moments now. They're only moments through my day to where I could feel something and then go outside and let it out and boom, come back in and I'm back on my program, you know. And it's only through these rooms right here where I learned how to do that, you know. And with that being said, happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there, you know. And all the mothers that have to be fathers, you know, like, congratulations to you guys on doing things, you know. And I love you guys, and I'm going to keep work coming back, man. I'm going to continue to work for the rest of this 24 and be happy to wake up to another one. Thank you, guys. You're muted.
There you go. Leah, would you like to share?
No, I'm just kidding. Frankly, I'm an alcoholic. You know, thank you, Adam, for your share. I for a second, I was like, oh, yeah, I can get to hear Adam. I haven't seen him in for so long, but then I realized, I was like, oh, that's right. I have heard him share. It's been so long. Of course, obviously, you know, what stuck out to me getting was, you know, you're talking about being homeless, because I was homeless, too, and it's crazy because it's a crazy life being homeless, you know what I mean? That's where I was at before I came back. I came into AA and it saved my life completely. And I did as well have that problem with God, you know what I mean? And what you're talking about, how you're improving you're improving on that relationship with God, you know. That's what they're talking about when they say, you know, improving your conscious contact with God, you know, through prayers and prayer and meditation. And that right there, like, honestly, like, the more you improve your that contact with your higher power, you know, with God, is your understanding, like, things in your life don't that would trouble you before, or that would just have you just giving up, like wanting to just give up and sit down, and you know what I mean, or throw one back, you know. It just, but those things don't. You learn how to, I guess, you come with like a peacefulness, like, you know what I mean. You have a different way of a different feeling towards those type of things, you know what I mean? Especially for me, because when I would have any issue, like my car just got stolen, you know what I mean? Amongst other things going on, that right there, it's freaking hot as hell. Like, you know, I can't even go nowhere because I can't take the baby nowhere, and it's just all these things are coming from that one thing, and normally, you know, in my addiction, I'd be like, who needs a fucking car? Let's just drink. Fuck it. Do something else. Like, you know what I mean? I mean, who cares? Forget it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I honestly, like, I, that, and if I, that would take me back out. Like, you know what I mean? I wouldn't even know how to deal with it, wouldn't want to deal with it, or I'd be on some mad ass rage. You know what I mean? Just mad at the fucking world. Like, mad at the world, because that's what I did, you know, just be mad at the world, mad at myself, mad at everything and anything. And it kind of, like, I sat, like, a couple days later after my car got stolen, I sat down and I looked at myself, literally looking at myself in the mirror, and I was like, dude, you're a fucking bot, bro. You know, I was like, that's right. I was, because these tools and people sharing in the meetings and all these things that I've improved in myself, within myself, have helped me to deal with life on life's terms. You know what I mean? Because before I didn't know how to do that. All I knew how to pick up. That's it. That's the only thing I knew how to do. And how you were talking about, you know, your girl being pregnant and then you missing that sonogram. Dude, I literally went to a sonogram. I went to a sonogram when I was pregnant with my baby. And it's kind of like when you said that, I kind of like, I don't know, I kind of went into like a daydream kind of thing because I was drinking. You know what I mean? So it's like everything was kind of like hazy. You know what I'm saying? Like, and so it's like I was kind of like not there, but I was there for my own sonogram. So it's kind of like I feel what you're saying, you know, but in a different kind of way. And when I got those 3D sonograms, I looked at that baby and she was laughing, like she got her to laugh. And she's like, I never see that. And she's like, I'm going to like give you like, she's all, we're going to 3D that. And like, she's like, we're going to see if we can do this. Like she gave me all kinds of pictures of that one scene, that one clip, because the baby was laughing and you could see her just laughing. She was so happy. And, that right there, it hit me hard. It hit me really hard. And, although, you know, I came and I was working my program and I was almost a year and I was pretty close. And, I went back out and I lied to everybody. You know what I mean? I kept it a secret. I covered it up the best I fucking could. And I was just falling apart. And I know a few people could see it. A few people who are really close to me could see it, and you know what I mean. And when I couldn't live like that anymore. You know what I mean? I mean, especially sitting there looking at my baby, and I'm just like, she's the only one who I've actually experienced all those things. Like being pregnant sober is totally different than not being sober. Tell you that much. You get to feel everything, like everything, and it's like, whoa. You know, just going through those milestones with her as a baby, I'm like, I don't know how to deal with this. Like, I'm a new mom or some shit, and I got five kids, you know, and it's like, come on, what the heck, dude? You should know this, but I don't remember going through those things, you know, and you could tell the difference, not like, I fucked up my other kids. You could tell the difference between her and them, you know what I mean? It hurts. It hurts, for one. But it also, they see me improving and doing these things, and they tell me. They're old enough to tell me, you know, Mom, we're glad you had my Leah, because without her, we don't think we'd have a mom. Like, you know, my kids are very outspoken. They'll tell me how it is, you know what I mean? They're just like me. But it's just all these little things that now that I sit down and I think about, I'm just like, you know, and what saved me, because normally if I go back out, I don't even know for how, God knows how long, or if I would ever come back, like, you know, and this time I just, I hung in there, and it's something that someone, that Bill said to me, you know what I mean? He was just like, look, he goes out, runs out in the street, you know, and you get your kid and you're yelling at him, and he thinks he's in trouble, you know, and you're yelling at him, he thinks he's in trouble, but, you know, you love him and you care for him. You don't want him to get hurt, you know? So, but you kind of protect him, you know what I mean? Like, so anything that happens from here on out, we love you and we care for you. And we want you to be safe, you know what I mean? And he's like, and I had a lot of secretary positions and they let me go. And I had to give up those positions because I relapsed, you know? And I had asked Bill because I still had a position with Valley Group. And I was like, so what about that one? He's like, girl, I got a hook in you. I'm not letting you go. Like, you know, and that right there, I think I'm almost sure, like, if I didn't have that moment where he said that to me, I probably would have had a big resentment on AA or on the people in AA. Like, you know, I have a problem with people, with myself and people. I feel like people just give up on me or have no faith in me or whatever, you know what I mean? And that right there, he was just like, I have a hook in you. I'm not letting you go nowhere. Girl, we got you. And I'm just like, oh, you know, and I cried. I cried like a freaking, I cried more than I cried when I was telling everybody I relapsed, you know what I mean? And I was just, it was tears of joy though, you know, and I've come so far since then. I mean, I got 314 days and so, 320 days. And that year's coming up, and this will be the first time in my whole life I've ever had a year sober. I mean, literally, like, my whole life, like, since I was, like, 12. And it's amazing. And I have Team Valley Group's going to be going in person, and I'm like, shit, you want me to get up there in the front of people and be secretary? That's interesting. You know, and I'm just like, but everyone keeps like, girl, you got this. You got this. You're going to do great. And I'm like, I know you say that, but you know what I mean? It's just, but I couldn't be more happier where I'm at. You know, and with my life, with my school, with, you know, with my daughter, the way I'm raising my kid, like I couldn't be more happier. And if it wasn't for everything in AA and the people in AA, you know, I have a list. I have a phone list, a list of guys that I can call and a list of girls that I can call, honestly, because I'm kind of like, I never used to even call girls or talk to girls like that, like at all. I felt like they had nothing to offer me, I guess you could say. But I've gotten over that for sure, because I do group chat with the girls now, you know, which is amazing. But I'm just really grateful, you know, and I thank you, Adam, for your share, like, because I was starting to get back in that feeling where it's like I haven't been really connecting with anybody in AA, like, you know, like they don't understand me, they've never been their type thinking in my head, you know, and I forgot about Adam. You know what I mean? Because, you know, we kind of been through the same things, you know, and I forgot that. And I think that's why I signed on today, because I wasn't going to. I don't know. It just popped up on my calendar, and I was like, oh, might as well, you know, and I did. And that's why, you know, God speaks in mysterious ways. He works in mysterious ways, and everything comes at the right moment. And I couldn't be more happier. I couldn't be more blessed. And, that's all I got. Take another 24.
Jeremy, would you like to share?
Hey, thank you. Yes. Jeremy, alcoholic. Thank you for your share. Thankful for AA. This program has given me hope on a daily basis. You know, I can see the progress in my recovery and all that. In this program, I've learned a lot working this program, you know, and couldn't have done it without this program. Even whenever I was sober, you know, I was miserable.
I don't know how. It's a miracle. It's a miracle of AA, you know, that I'm not where I was at, you know, or even further down in that hole that alcohol had me in, you know. Just grateful to be sober today, you know. Another day sober. And thanks for your share. And I'll pass.
Let's see. How about Bill? You sure, Bill?
Why, you're dragging the bottom of the barrel now. Hey, thanks so much for being here, Adam. I don't know if you've noticed it yet or not. I texted you some of the pictures that, from the trips that you were talking about. And, gosh, you know, sometimes things just come full circle, you know? When I introduced Adam, I mentioned that he was the eldest son of a guy who was my best friend from high school. And this was a guy who, as I said before, just refused to give up on me. He's got an amazing heart. And he knew that I was in trouble. And he repeatedly took steps to be a friend to me, to try to help me. Even though, you know, he's not an alcoholic, and he didn't have a solution for me, but he had a great deal of concern and care for a friend. And when his son started to have some signs of a problem, I had been with you guys for a while already, And so I got to be a friend to my friend while he was going through this struggle of trying to help his son. And you know, it's amazing the way that the experience that I had as Adam's father's friend to see just what we put our family members through. And also to get an appreciation for just how resilient our families can be. You know, there's so many different stories. One of the oldest stories that I know, And I'm not here selling seats to church, and I'm not selling Bibles. I'm not here to tell you what you should believe or what any of that stuff means, okay? But if you've been exposed to that book, you might know the story of the prodigal son, right? The son who insisted, he told his dad, hey dad, check it out. When you die, I'm going to get half your shit, so, why don't you just give me half your shit now, right? And for some reason, the father did. He gave him half his stuff, and the kid takes off, and he squanders it, and he ends up, you know, sleeping with pigs and yada yada. And somehow he manages to find his way home, and his father is overjoyed. His father's heart is just bursting with joy that that his son has come home. And I know. That my friend has that same feeling for Adam, and I know by getting a chance to watch that, I really do know that my family feels the same way about me. And it's in some ways it seems maybe a little bit unfortunate that we have to go through some of those kinds of things to see the truth about those details. But you know, if you got to go through it. it can be really rewarding to see how things come full circle, and I remember when we went to that retreat with Adam, and that was in 2013. So that was 6 years before Adam got sober, and or so. And Adam had some kind of medication stuff he was using, as he said, to help him sleep. And I could so relate, because you know that was my. I would do things to help me sleep too, when I wasn't in recovery. And, so I got it, but I also knew that, you know, this probably wasn't a real good, this probably wasn't a really good thing for him the way that it wasn't a really good thing for me. And, NyQuil. Oh, not the NyQuil. Oh my God. Anyway. Kind of crazy the way our stories revolve, but I'm just overwhelmed at how things seem to happen when we're doing the best we can to do the right things. My life is so full of blessings today. Some of you who know me know that when it was first suggested that I might benefit from not drinking so much, one of the things that happened was I got really angry at my dad. I wanted to blame him for, the behavior that I was taking. And there are some things, legitimately, there are some things in the relationship between my father and I that I'm sure that if he could undo, he would. But that perspective is not one that I came to AA with. I came to AA with the perspective of a victim. And I'll tell you, if you haven't experienced it yourself, choosing to be a victim can be a very comforting place to be. What I have found is there is a tremendous amount of power in being a victim, right? And I don't know if you guys have ever done this kind of thing, but I'm inclined to tell you, my friends, I'm inclined to tell you a story in just the right way so that you will have empathy or sympathy for me, that you will, you'll say, yeah, Bill, you shouldn't put up with that shit, man. You know, like I'll tell you about my boss and all the things he did, right? I'm not going to tell you about all the stuff that I did. I'm just going to tell you about the stuff that he did, right? And then I'm going to tell you about all that, and then you guys are going to say, yeah, you shouldn't put up with that, man. That's cool. And, what happens is that power that I get from you, fills the gap in me that keeps me so disconnected from the truth. We had a guy was here and spoke for us a few weeks back. Matthew was here celebrating his anniversary. I think it was 28 years, and Matthew said something. He said that loneliness. Or maybe it was isolation, but one of those two was not resolved by spending time around other people. He said that isolation was best resolved with the truth. And when he said that, I thought, man, this guy's gone soft. I mean, he's been meditating a little too much, maybe, you know? And then he went on to talk about, he told us a story about how he and his wife, would get into a disagreement, and, his need to be right, put him in a position where, you know, he would argue with his wife until she was defeated. And then he went on to share that, you know, his wife was also disabled. And of course, you know, when you get that picture, then all of a sudden, you know, Matthew goes from a guy that's standing up for himself to being a real creep, right? I mean, who's gonna just, you know, badger his poor disabled wife until she, collapses, emotionally, right? And the truth is that, I've done that too. I've been so frickin' insistent on being right that I wear people down. I grind people down. I hate that about me. And the good news is that, you know, when people like Matthew talk about that, I realize that I'm not the only one that's made those mistakes. And I realize that, you know, if I'm willing to make myself a little bit vulnerable and I'm willing to do the things that are necessary to change, I don't have to continue to be that guy. Adam told you that, that he wasn't where he wanted to be when his first, child was born, but I know for damn straight he was there when his, next two kids were. Because I've seen some of the pictures. that's just a small picture of what's happened for me in this fellowship of AA as a result of doing some things that I didn't think made any sense. Things have changed in my life in ways that I could have never dreamed, I couldn't have predicted. I'm just really, really fortunate to be among some really special people. So thank you for letting me share. Adam, thank you so much for being here tonight and sharing your experience, strength, and hope. I'm really proud of you, and I'm comforted by the changes in your life, because as crazy as it seems, I don't always see or I don't always believe that I've changed. And it's through other people sharing their stories of how they've changed that I get confidence that my story is real. This isn't some dream. I didn't just make it up. I've changed in some profoundly positive ways as a result of the things that we do here. And I'm so glad to see that that's happening in other people's lives too. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Bill.
I think everyone that's here has shared. I know Mike doesn't have a microphone.
That's so for Anthony. Sorry.
Anthony! Yeah.
He was who I was going to call on anyway, so perfect.
Hello. My name's Anthony. I got 1% on this phone, and I'm praying that it goes all the way through. I want to give all you guys a thank you and a happy Father's Day, you know, and for the fathers that don't get to see their kids or don't get to see their family members, I just, you know, a happy Father's Day, and you know that God is good and our higher power. And that he sees us through it, you know, we're not alone. We're not alone. We feel alone at times, but we're not alone. He's always there, you know, and the enemy wants to make you feel like you're alone, but you're not alone. You're surrounded by him, you know, he's good, you know, and he wants good for you. He doesn't want bad for you. He'll wait right next to you. I mean, he's sitting right next to you, you know, if we're in our sin or we're in our sin or doing something that we're not supposed to be doing, he's sitting patiently right next to us, telling us, when are we gonna, you know, come over and just stop doing what we're doing and get on the positive track? You know what I mean? Get on that right track with our higher power. You know what I mean? And I just want to say thank you. I've been working the steps. I'm working on step 7 is reaching out to people, walking in the humility, reaching out to people and getting closer to God. I've been doing that step today, and I reached out, you know, not to boast in myself, but in our higher power. And, man, you know, the things that Brother Adam was talking about, you know, that he has, like, one friend that he in his addiction that he talks to, that he's bringing a positive message back, you know. Now, that right there is a big, bold step, you know, in this walk that we have. If you're able to pull someone out, you know what I mean, from an addiction or from going backwards instead of forward, you're doing a good thing, you know what I mean? You're going beyond, you know what I mean? It takes a lot for somebody to reach out to somebody, even though we may not think it doesn't, but it actually does, you know what I mean? We got to break those chains of being embarrassed or being ashamed, and you know what, hey, this person might need to hear that inspirational message, you know what I mean? You might have that, God might be speaking through you to reach out to that other person, you know what I mean, that your higher power to reach out to talk to that other person through you, you know what I mean? I know I fall, but God, it says a righteous man may fall 7 times, but he rises again, you know what I mean? You may fall, but you know what, you could rise up again, you know? God's not going to let you be down on the floor, you know what I mean, and leave you there. He's going to pick you back up, you know. He doesn't want you on the floor, you know, and, yeah, and to take somebody like that, you know what I mean, I've been out there, and, I've reached out to a couple people. I prayed for a couple people, not to boast in myself, but in our higher power, because I can't do things on my own. And when I've had enough, I'm not doing it the way I'm supposed to be doing it, and I know that it, the higher power is what I need to lean on my understanding, or going walking through my steps, through the AA book, and reading my positive word, reading something that's gonna actually benefit me, not something that's gonna bring me down. You know what I mean? And I have a problem where temptation kicks in, where I want to listen to how you say it's that kind of music. The music that is secular, you know what I mean? Music that has foul language, music that does this, that, and it hits the heart, you know what I mean? And you start to act a certain way, and I kind of noted that, you know what I mean? I was like, okay, I need to back off of what I'm listening to and continue to listen to my worship music, continue to keep doing how I've been doing it, because the enemy wants to take us off a route. He wants to make us do other things, but it's God is good, and, you know, I remember in my addiction when I used to drink a lot, you know what I mean? One was never enough, and I always had to go back to the store and to re-up on my beer, you know what I mean, my booze, and be drunk all night. Next thing you know, I'm waking up in the morning, I'd have my cup of coffee would be a beer in the morning, you know what I mean, and that's not it no more. That's not the case. You know what I mean? Wake up in the morning and you're saying thank you for another blessed day that we have. You know what I mean? On this earth. Because every day's not promised. You know what I mean? Every day's not promised. And if we could be an example to our kids, then you know what? I'm going to try to do my best to be an example to my kids when I do see them, you know? And hopefully that when they see their dad, whenever they do see him, that it's a good example, a good role model, not like the way they used to see me before. And I didn't like that fact where I'd be out there drinking and my kids would be calling me and stuff, and I wouldn't want to pay attention to them. I wouldn't want to, you know, nothing. It would just be about getting drunk, getting loaded, you know, and just going out and partying. You know what I mean? Go out and party. Go do this, go do that. And you know what I mean? Like, hey, you got kids, you know what I mean? Like, the things we do when we're young, you know what I mean? It's now that I'm getting a little bit more older, I'm actually maturing, you know what I mean? And I'm not this little kid no more, you know what I mean? And yeah, maturity goes a long way. I feel maturity goes a long way in my walk. And, I don't want to feel like I'm babbling and whatnot, but I know that when you work your steps, there's progress and there's positivity at the outcome. And yeah, we do get mad at times, but hey, we got to humble ourselves. Walking in humility is another way to get closer to God. our higher power to get closer to him, you know what I mean? And that humility is like, man, I'm kind of, I had to dig deep into what I was reading and to actually understand, you know what I mean? And I was like, dang, okay. You know, there has to be a benefit, you know, you're walking in this humility, what can be the outcome out of this, you know what I mean? Do I just sit in my mire? Do I sit in my mire? Do I just stay in that clay? Or do I just, you know what I mean? Because God, our higher power is supposed to pull us out of that, you know what I mean? And that's how I feel like, well, okay, you're walking in this humility, okay, you're in that miry clay or whatever, and you know, God picks you up out of all that stuff, and you see past all that stuff. And I just like, I look up, and I go, okay, now I get my understanding. Because I was looking down before when I shouldn't be looking down. I should be looking up and giving thanks. You know, because, hey, you know, every day is not promised. We're not promised every day here. You know what I mean? We're not given a time when we leave. You know, we're not given a time, a date. We don't know that. The only one that knows that is our higher power. And it's you know what I mean? So we want to make the best out of the time we have here on this earth. Every second, every minute, every hour of this day, you know, there could be something positive that comes out of it. You know, maybe, yeah, sometimes we don't do nothing, but maybe that's the time that we get our peace to meditate on what we read, to work on our steps, to do something, you know, and don't stay idle. Don't stay idle. I hate being idle. When idle happens, I start to walk around and I'm just like, no. And then you start to procrastinate, and then you start to think, and then you're just like, no, I don't like being like that. I don't like being idle. I want to keep moving around and, you know, keep the body moving, you know, and if there's someone out there that needs to get reached out to, you know, and hey, you know what, I'm going to reach out to them, but I'm not going to go out and buy you a beer. That's the thing. You know what I mean? Hey, go buy me a 12-pack at the store, you know what I mean? Like, dang. Is that a good thing to do or is that a bad thing? You know what I mean? So I'm balancing things as well. You know what I mean? And it's just like, no, I'm not going to do that because that's like me, tying a milestone around your neck and being tossed into the ocean. You know what I mean? But, I just want to say thanks and God is good. And I just want to say thank you, Bill. I know that, I have moments where I feel like, you know what I mean, I don't know if it's social anxiety or what, but I get kind of like embarrassment or what. That's why I always ask for boldness to reach out to speak, because I know for a fact that you know what we're doing, it works. This is not no BS. This really does work, you know what I mean? And I feel in my heart that, you know, if we could bring more people that are hurting to groups like this and see an outcome in them and see them flourish and be positive and be progressive in their life, then, hey, we're doing a good job, you know what I mean? We're doing something good. You know, we're not letting them down. And if I could be walking around and sowing a seed of drinking a bottle of water, then, hey, so be it. You know, so be it. You know what I mean? If they want to see a water bottle in my hand and that's sowing the seed, I'm going to sow that seed. You know what I mean? Because I wanted to do something positive. Before it was a beer can, now it could be a water bottle, you know what I mean? And it's just like, oh man, God is good, you know? And I just want to say thank you, Bill. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody in this group. And everyone had something valuable to reach out, you know what I mean? And it's all glory, you know what I mean? Everything that's spoken and said, you know, it's for us to grow, you know what I mean? We're watering this tree. That it's not going to stay stagnant no more. You know what I mean? Sometimes we stay like that, but hey, we got to water ourselves, continue to water ourselves. And if it's working through Brother Oren or Leah or through Brother Bill, you know what I mean? Working through them to get watered, then we're going to get water so we can continue to grow. You know what I mean? And if we don't have that water, we're not going to grow. You know what I mean? And it's just like, and another thing, going around in circles. I hate going around in circles. That's one thing I hate. I don't like going around in circles. I want to know what I'm doing, and it's not like and clutter. Clutter, if there's too much clutter, I'm like, that's something that needs to get put in order. That's not, you know, but I don't know. I just got to work out my little kinks here and there. But God is good. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everyone in the AA meeting. And If it wasn't for this court thing, I'm gonna continue to do AA. If you guys still have AA for the online thing, I'm gonna continue. And if you guys have walk-in meetings, if I could go ahead and make it into a walk-in meeting, I'll go ahead and make it into a walk-in meeting as well. I don't want to stop because this right here is making an impact on my life. And if it's for me to help me to get closer to my kids, to have my family back, then, hey, you know what? I'm going to go the measure that I need to go in order to reach out, to see my kids again, to show them that I am doing good, you know? And it's not just because, you know, I have to go through a program or something like that. No, it's because, you know what? This is changing my life. It's a lifestyle. It's not go do this because the course said, no, it's a lifestyle. It's a life change. It's to change our lives, you know? And I know the hurt. I know the loss. Now I know how to come back, you know what I mean, what the enemy has stole from me, you know what I mean? So it's like, dang, thank you, and thank you, everybody, thank you.
Hey, thanks, Anthony. Thanks so much, man. That 1% really took you a long way, brother.
Yeah, I still got 1%.
All right. Hey, we're going to wrap up tonight. The Valley Group encourages sponsorship and service to our fellowship. We invite you to come early and